Welcome to another edition of the Southwest Cannabis Chronicle. I'm Russ Belville, and today we take a look at one of the newly legal states and how it's ramping up for its recreational cannabis market, the state of Nevada. And joining us on the program today, we have a longtime friend of the show in its various incarnations and a fellow former Pacific Northwester who's now in Las Vegas. It's David Rhines. David, welcome to the show.
Russ, thank you very much for having me. Great to be here.
Great to have you back. Tell me which and how many hats are you wearing now? Is it MJBA?
When you're in legal cannabis, you have to wear multiple hats because you have to get multiple revenue streams. You know, you and I were talking about it this morning. We have to juggle a lot of responsibilities on our way to creating a viable workplace for folks like us. I run the MJBA, which represents hundreds of legal cannabis businesses now all across the country, Washington, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts. Our movement is expanding. I also run, as a platform for communication, MJ Headline News and MJ News Network. So that keeps me full time. As one of the exciting things about having done this 5 years is that we've got mainstream interest in cannabis. I think that's the story about Las Vegas, really.
Yeah. Is how it's bringing in people, you know, because when the movement started in Washington and Colorado, but it seemed to be people that were already entrenched within marijuana.
That's right. So it started as what I would say concentric circles of evolution. It started with those activists. This was always a political movement, even before it was medical. So that's people kind of lose that.
Going back to normal in the 70s.
In the 70s, it was a human rights issue, an offshoot. Keith Straub, started as a Nader Raider, really as kind of a, hey, as a civil right, we ought to be able to have our own cannabis and not be imperiled by legal hurdles. So that was really the original movement. Then you got the patients on top of that, what I would call the patient activists. Then in the initial legalization, you got the initial entrepreneurs, the initial licensees in Washington and Colorado. Now we're two national elections into legalization, right? So we've got all kinds of folks from Maine to New Jersey talking about cannabis. We've got mainstream politicians. And for the first time, you've got real mainstream consumer interest with things like CBD, really not only sweeping the nation, but the world markets.
But part of the consumer interest when I think of Nevada is number one, the lack of home grow. If you live any farther or closer than 25 miles,
which puts you out in the desert,
right? Yeah, so it reminds me of Breaking Bad. You got to have your own little RV and you drive it out in the Nevada desert and grow your weed. And then the $600 public consumption misdemeanor that still exists, or that is,
the movement is iterative. Evolution comes in waves. Listen, it was not too long ago when out in the desert, you were greeted by a billboard sign that said, seed or a stem, 20 years, trafficking life.
Yeah.
Do not gamble in Nevada, right? So there was a zero tolerance. Today, you've got mainstream cannabis stores on the strip. You have some of the largest rec stores in the world in Las Vegas, and they are selling some pretty fine cannabis there. Now, it's expensive, and the selection is not as wide as we see in Washington State or in Colorado, but it's new, and as of July 1, we are really cranking on sales. They have generated millions of dollars, more than $4 million in new tax revenues, probably closer to six at this point every day. And with 43 million consumers traveling to Las Vegas as their playground, legal cannabis is a nice addition to gambling and shows and dining and alcohol.
Yeah, I would think that as compared to It's not as if there's nothing to go see and do in Seattle or Denver or Portland, but if you're going there, you know, weed is going to kind of factor into your decision as a tourist. Perhaps you're more of a 420 type person. Whereas Las Vegas, there's people going there for conventions that have weed is the farthest thing from their world, and they're going to be confronted with, hey, it's a reality.
Well, but here's the thing, Russ, and you know, you and I live inside those, we were talking about concentric circles,
the bubbles.
So we came into the early concentric circles, you before me, and so everything we see and do is tainted or flavored with cannabis, right?
Yeah.
But what we don't realize is that for the majority of Americans,
yeah, 88 some percent,
cannabis is a part of their life. They have either smoked it, or someone in their family smokes it, or they've had experience with it, and there's no big deal. And many of them are intrigued with things like vape, intrigued with things like edibles, right? They don't want to smoke. They don't want to smell like Cheech and Chong as they go into the classroom or they go into the shopping mall. But if they could take an edible or a tincture or a patch, they certainly would and will. And so that's really what you're seeing in places like Las Vegas. These are folks with money. These are folks who are enjoying the full spectrum of entertainment options and are including cannabis in that. So it's a real normalization. I think Las Vegas represents the mainstreaming of cannabis, the commercialization of cannabis. And while some of those in the inner circle, that inner sanctum of, hey, wasn't it cool and we were the cool kids club and it was only those of us who were out in the parking lot behind the dumpster, that's nostalgic, right? But mainstream comes with us the notion that there is equal rights and that there are folks along the spectrum who may not agree with you politically, who may not be in the same music clubs or social clubs that you are, but they also enjoy the benefits of legal cannabis.
So now, as you had mentioned, we're on our third wave of states, and we've doubled each time, 2, 4, 8, you know, yeah, we're up to it. In this third wave, are you seeing the regulators and the entrepreneurs learning their lessons from the first set of states, or are they some of them making the same dumb mistakes?
Well, of course, we are humans, and we are doomed to repeat the same mistakes ad infinitum. That's just our existential mission in life, or crisis, as it were. But no, the reality is that that's why the MJBA and myself have decamped from the Pacific Northwest that I love and have spent, you know, the better part of a decade, fighting the good fight and making great friends. But this is where the movement needs us. No one's from Las Vegas, or very few are. And so we have an opportunity. It's a small market, but it's a powerful one, one that touches all 50 states and indeed the rest of the world. And so by being there and being part of that, we can help shape policy. No, there is a continuum that every market goes through. You talked about over-regulation. You talked about over-taxation. LV and Nevada have certainly struggled with things like distribution, where first there was a monopoly by the alcohol distributors. And it was a way to sort of bring them into the fold, right, in a tightly controlled market. And yet they weren't able to do it because they didn't have the benefit and knowledge of this. And it's a fragmented market, right? Prohibition brings with it the added expense and challenge of fragmentation. It means that every state has to build its own system. You cannot have economies of scale. You cannot have the benefit of building a brand market, that goes nationally. You have to, in every market, be aware of the legal constraints, the compliance issues, what you can do on shelves, what you can sell, how you can talk about your product, how you can market that product. Mm. And you've seen that challenge with things like CBD, right, which we think was legal in all 50 states, according to some banners I read.
Yeah.
And yet now we see the FDA coming down and talking to some serious players about making medical claims, right? Yeah. The Stanley Brothers would say, hey, this is anecdotal, but you cannot, it's like organic, right?
Right.
You cannot use federal terminology without federal permission and certification. Absolutely.
That's correct. And another aspect of this that you had mentioned and I want to revisit is how the people out there, I always say the fastest way that you could get cannabis legalized in your state, if it's not already, is to give your grandma some cannabis salve. And these alternative methods of being able to, because they are curious, they are interested, some of them at this point, but they do, I always say they don't hate pot, they hate potheads. They don't want to be associated with the culture or the smell or stigma.
That's exactly right. And that's the last vestiges of prohibition is cultural. It's this notion that, hey, you, Russ, might be okay as a pot smoker, but the rest of them are dirty hippies. My mom, who supports my legalization efforts dearly, as only a mother could of a son's efforts, and yet she warns me sometimes, just stay away from the dopers, Dave.
The dopers.
Yeah, the dopers. And I say, well, Mom, you know, I'm probably in most circles considered a doper.
Probably the dopiest.
Yeah. And she says, no, because you're so well groomed and you know, right. You're a real person, and so I think it's that cultural normalization that really is our big challenge.
Yeah.
And yes, the fastest growing industry, to answer your question, segment of the industry is in these non-smokables. It's in the medicinal, and that comes in every form. I mean, you're seeing not just pharmaceuticals and those are coming onto the market in a rapid fashion, but you're seeing nutraceuticals, which include things like salves and tinctures and transdermal patches and gels. You're seeing suppositories, you're seeing sexual aids, and the fastest growing demographic for cannabis consumption is that female over 55. She's buying Kush creams, which are fabulous products, by the way. You know, she is consuming Mary's medicinals. And she's one of those folks that is not culturally a cannabis consumer. They're what the Fresh Toast calls the canna curious, right? Folks who lead normal lives and yet are very interested and would certainly eat an edible as a dessert at a party, just like they would have a glass of wine or, you know, something else at a party as part of entertainment. And so they're very interested in those products. Now, part of the challenge and what I liked in Nevada, in Las Vegas is doing it very well compared to Portland. My experience here, I told you as I went to a couple of shops yesterday, is that Portland is still a dispensary model, right? I'm still walking in, I'm still getting carded, I'm still feeling like I'm a methadone user.
Right?
And they got to call me in and, oh, not all of us can be in one room because, fuck, you get 5 or 10 pot smokers in a room and, you know, who knows what might happen. whereas I can have a super liquor store filled with hundreds of people loading up their cart with 151 and no problem, man. We'll take your credit card and help you out to your van.
Yeah.
Right? And give you a to-go cup. So it's a real different experience. In Vegas, I'm feeling in some of the stores, right, a sense now of merchandising, a sense of productization, a sense of a customer service. You know, I'm on a couple of affinity programs. There's softwares like Baker out there where you come in and you type in your code and they know what you've purchased before and they'll give you a discount the more that you purchase as a patient. And, you know, so those things are like normalization, right? That's like going and using your CVS card.
Yeah.
You know, not meeting me in the back and going, hey, man, here's a baggie and I don't know what it weighs.
Yeah, let me get my little gold hanging scale out.
The hanging ones, yeah, because they were really
accurate as hell. Another aspect of Nevada's legalization was written into it. We mentioned it as well, was the distributors, the alcohol distributors were written in as a monopoly. That's still got some court battles to go over it. But the idea was, like you mentioned, let's buy off, in a sense, preempt any opposition from the alcohol industry, which is a big political player in most states, but in Nevada, especially given gaming and
that's
casinos.
Right. That's right.
And that's another industry that's unique in Nevada is the casino industry. And we know Sheldon Adelson, who's the guy behind the Sands, and I think one of the other properties out there, donated millions to try to stop legalization from happening, succeeded in Arizona.
Bought the newspaper.
Bought the Las Vegas Review Journal, which promptly switched its views on marijuana.
Interestingly enough. Yeah.
So these are at play in Nevada like they aren't in any other state. I think there's some good news. We saw the Constellation Brands with the Corona getting involved.
Exactly right. And that's up in Canada.
Yeah.
That's
so right, are we going to see alcohol? Is alcohol deciding where it's going to sit on these sidelines?
Yeah. So again, you know, from my perspective, everything happens in waves. This is part of Canifest Destiny, meaning that, you know, in Manifest Destiny, we took our country from east to west as our natural right. And now we're taking legalization from the West Coast to the East Coast. That wave is unstoppable. It is inevitable. And at this point, it is crescendoing in places like Nevada. So I think that it's not a question of if, it's a question of how and when. And right now we're figuring out, well, how best to integrate cannabis into a society that is pro alcohol, and no more demonstration nakedly than in Vegas, right? And so again, Nevada for me represents that place where America plays, where indeed the world looks at how America plays, and it highlights those things that, hey, sex and alcohol and glamour and conspicuous consumption, right? That has been those are the four horsemen of capitalism that are driving, you know, our culture. And now we're integrating, well, cannabis. And up to this point, it's been, no, we can't let them in with a horseman because they'll lead the horses off the path and people won't gamble and drink and cavort the way that they should in the playground, right?
Yeah.
And so what we're realizing is that that's not true, that actually those people who have been coming to Vegas are cannabis consumers, just like your neighbor is a cannabis consumer and your boss and your colleague. It's all of us. And so we're figuring out, well, how does that work? The reality is it does cut into your budget, right? It's an economic thing. And when you have $100 to spend a night on partying, it's, I'm going to spend $100 on alcohol, or I'm going to buy an eighth of weed and twist up a few J's, and that will be my entertainment, along with gambling. So it's really share of market. And so those folks are figuring out, how do they get paid? How does that integrate? So you've seen the Gaming Commission encourage, and in fact, it's not a hard rule, but essentially the change in policy from last year's MJ BizCon is that none of the casinos are welcoming marijuana events, that all marijuana events have to be in non-casino properties. And I think in part of that, it's putting pressure on the federal government. It's putting pressure on the insurance companies. It's putting pressure on all those mechanisms to figure it out. It's putting pressure on dollars. I mean, the number of dollars that are coming in and will go through those marijuana companies in Nevada is just unbelievable in a handful of folks. So that shapes policy. And it is all about jobs and opportunity and market development. But you just opened this past week, before I came out here, the largest rec store in the world. It's an Indian-owned entity in North Las Vegas. It's enormous. I mean, it's like a Costco for weed, you know.
Amazing. So Las Vegas, Nevada is what we're talking about. We're here with David Rines from the MJBA. And, of course, the MJ Biz Conference is coming up soon. What are the dates on that?
That's like the 15th, 16th, and 17th. And this year it's going to be at the convention center.
And it's by far the biggest expo, isn't it?
It is. It's the, you know, there's so many conventions and MJBA is part of so many. We're not officially a part of the MJ BizCon. However, we have to be part of the scene because everybody in cannabis is there. It's really for two reasons. One, everybody's cropped out. So, you know, it's Croptober is over and now it's time to party a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's Vegas, baby. So it's less about the programming, which, you know, or the exhibitors and, hey, there's another extraction machine or something like that. The reality is that you want to hang out with folks and have a social time and do a little business and make a little difference. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. There's lots of parties. I'll be going to the Dope Magazine Golden Ticket Party. So David Tran gave me my golden ticket. There's the Sensi Party out there. There's the Jack Herrera Cup out there. there are a number of events that will make the scene. So yeah, it'll be fun.
Fantastic. And I'll have to check and see if I can find me a cheap flight to Vegas to catch that. That'd be a lot of fun to hang out. David Rhines, MJBA, let's give folks all the contact information they need.
Yeah, so the first place, we're all about three things. We're about get informed, man, get connected, build your professional network, and then through that, find and explore your opportunity. So I would suggest that number one, what we want to try to do is go to MJ. newsnetwork.com. Start reading the news, start figuring it out. Listen to your show every day. I certainly do. I think that it's such a dynamic industry. There's so much news every single day. I mean, look, you were talking yesterday about Chris Christie,
yeah,
and the buffoons, Jeff Sessions, making an idiot of himself, yeah, yet again. These are contemporary things. These are things that we can influence, and indeed you do influence it. So yeah, go to mjba.net, join, find a meetup.com. I mean, I'm doing a meetup today here in Portland. I'm in Portland today, staying at Delta 9 House, which is really cool.
Awesome.
So if you come to Portland, you got to stay at Delta 9 House. It's unbelievable. The chickens are super cool. But we're going to be talking about safety and the cannabis workplace. I got Farmer Tom Lauerman coming. I've got Norm Ives from Mosaic Insurance. I've got Mike Stanley from Oxark. I've got Sally Koch from Indy Safety. I got Alex Wheatley from Fisher Phillips. It's at Fisher Phillips. So you got large school insurance companies, legal companies, OSHA compliant companies, the federal government, and farmers all working together to figure out what's a good place to work. What are the challenges of carpal tunnels, or what kind of equipment should we be using? What about off-gassing? There's a lot of consideration. We're building a whole new industry here, and it's not just about are we good people or bad people. Hey, we got real serious work to do. Mm-hmm. So get involved, folks. We need all of you.
Thanks, David Rhines, for stopping in with us, and good luck and enjoy the meetup.
Thank you, Russ. Really appreciate it, brother.